From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Harvest Hour edition of the Closing Mark Report. It's September the 15th, 2008. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel. He's the senior grains analyst at Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. And later in this half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with the folks at the Andersons right here in Champaign County. In agricultural news, despite the race for the presidency, it appears Washington is intent to take up some sort of energy-related legislation prior to the November election. And have you signed up for the next round of the direct and countercyclical payments? We'll have details of the deadlines and much more. Hey, don't forget, in just 26 minutes, we'll check in with the folks at Chesapeake Energy to discuss the global agricultural weather forecast. And after that, for most of these radio stations, we'll continue our program and open the phone lines to your questions. Our first guest on the Harvest Hour edition of the Closing Mark Report is Joe Persaki of USDA NASS. The Closing Mark Report is a production of WILL. It's public radio from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois.
The Closing Market Report is made possible in part by a grant from Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois, a full-service commodities firm with two toll-free lines. In Illinois, 800-252-2013. In Indiana, 800-637-3123. Or email to cooley at admworld.com.
In Chicago, on a Monday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. Nearby December wheat contracted $7.27.5, 7 3/4 of a cent higher. The March at $7.49, up 7 1/4. And the May contracted $7.62, up 6 3/4. Kansas City wheat at $7.63.5, up 4 cents today. December corn futures $5.62, a settlement price a penny and a quarter higher. March futures at $5.80 1/4, down 1 3/4 in May. $5.92, down 2.5 cents. July corn futures $6.25, down 4 1/4. November soybeans $11.79, 23 cents lower for the day. January futures at $11.94 3/4, down 23 1/4. And the March contract at $12.85, down 24. May futures $12.16, down 24 cents. October bean meal at $3.36.50, 20 higher. October bean oil at $46.08, down $1.43. October live cattle futures today $103.75, $1.60 higher. December futures at $105.32.5, up $1.55. And September futures $109.70, down 20 cents. October at $108.82.5, down a dime on the afternoon. October lean hog $67.35, $1.25 higher. December futures finished at $66.55, 100 weight, $1.25 higher there as well. You're listening to the Closing Mark Report from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Here's what the outside markets are doing at this hour on a rough day on Wall Street. Dow Jones Industrial Average is now down just about 320 points at 11,104. The U.S. dollar is trading 0.01 lower at 78.91. October crude oil futures at $3.49 lower, 97.69 a barrel. November at 95.50, trading $5.75 lower. October ethanol futures at 222.7, down 2 and 9 tenths. November at 220 even. That's just about unchanged on the day. October natural gas at 7.38 6/10, 2 cents higher. And the RBOB gasoline trading at 2.56 4/10 is just about 20 cents lower on the day. November trading 2.42 7/10, down 17 7 cents. October heating oil futures $2.78 9/10. This is diesel fuel, 15 cents lower. November heating oil at 2.80 6/10, down 14 4/10 on the afternoon. And the gold futures are trading at 783.1. That's down $22.80 on the day. CRB index now stands at 348.54. That's down 11.49. Here's what the forecast looks like for the two-state region. Tonight, gradual clearing, some patchy fog forming overnight. Lows will range from 42 in northwestern Illinois to 52 in the south. Tomorrow, mostly sunny skies. Highs will range from around 70 in the north to 76 in the south. By the way, a flood warning remains in effect for many counties in northern, central, and western Illinois and northwestern Indiana right on through the afternoon. The extended forecast says those flooded areas will dry out this week. No precip expected Tuesday through Friday, and dry weather will continue in most areas during the weekend and into early next week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Stuart Peterson. For over 20 years, Stuart Peterson has helped farmers manage both marketing opportunities and risks through their analysis, advice, and action. Stuart Peterson, confidence like never before. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on a Monday afternoon. Time to take a look at the agricultural futures markets. To help us do that this afternoon, Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, joins us. Good afternoon to you, Kurt.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Well, it's better to be here than in New York or in London or someplace else where Lehman Brothers has a big, big impact. Tell me how it impacted the commodity markets today, if at all.
Well, I think it was more of a factor in the overnight trading grain, in the grains, that is, because we had saw some huge volume take place. Whenever you see a big financial institution take a hit like that, there's a fallout from that, not only Lehman, but buyout from Merle and some talk of some other larger institutions having trouble. Not only commodities, but like you mentioned there, Wall Street in general. I mean, we're talking about a lot of jobs being lost and a lot of investment money being lost. So it's devastating. And it spills over to the commodity sector, and that's probably what's going to keep a lid on the grain market here over the short term. However, though, the raw fundamentals for corn and beans have turned positive, and I'll give the market support on price breaks in here.
Well, just how positive do you think it may have turned?
Well, looking at the fundamentals, the supply-demand balance sheet is a little tighter. Reading between the lines on the program you had on Commodity Week there has probably got room to be a little tighter yet down the road. You know, as far as production goes, a little less production. The question is demand on the other side. But over the weekend here, we saw some heavy, heavy rains. That's not good. Also, too, to couple with that, the cooler temperature, crop maturity is not coming along. We're losing growing degree days. So there's a lot of factors out there that adds uncertainty to the marketplace. And, of course, as we all well know, whenever there's uncertainty, you got to keep some price premium in there or support the marketplace until we get into the field and see what type of actual yield we have. So it's a roller coaster market. It's going to be an emotional market, and this market is going to be under the gun or quick here until we get into probably late October, early November.
From the squawk box, what was the push in the bean market lower?
Basically, the beans fell under the gun from specialty selling. The energy sector being hit, it was lower world vegetable oil markets. Bean oil was down over $1.43 today. It all sort of was related there somewhat. But also, too, the crush was less than expected. And you can read that both ways. One is demand is slowing. But the other side of the equation is that the beans aren't coming out of the field yet, and so therefore they're slow and crushed down, taking downtime until we have more of a railway supply of beans to crush, too.
Yeah, tell me a bit about that, because we had an awfully heavy rain across a large portion of Missouri and Illinois, Indiana, other states that were related to the hurricane as it came into the Gulf of Mexico and then wrapped its way up through the Midwest and the Mississippi Valley. Are we going to have a tougher harvest season because of this, or has harvest far enough behind at this point still that we're really just not ready to get into the field and there'll be some good drying days between now and the time that most farmers will be ready to put a combine in the field?
Well, all of the above. I mean, we've seen some excessive moisture around. It's going to take some time to dry out. We've got a clearer forecast here for a while. But if we see some more rain events come at us here, it's just going to keep conditions extremely wet. The other thing is, as far as the damage go, we were fortunate here in central part of Illinois, for the most part. You move in some areas there, there's some heavy winds associated with the rain, with the shallow roots and so forth. The corn went flat in a lot of areas, so it's going to create some real harvest headaches as we get into this fall. I mean, producers are eager to get in the field. Typically, we've got a lot more activity taking place. We're just going to have to put off plans to go to Florida a little later this year, Todd.
I suppose that'll be the case. Any expectations to see that there would be a drop this afternoon in the crop condition ratings at all?
Well, you know, as far as seasonality goes, we with the dry down and the maturity of the crop, we traditionally see a drop out of that good to excellent category of 1 to 2%. I wouldn't be surprised to maybe see that drop of about 1% out of good to excellent category. As far as the hurricane assessment and the wet weather and the flooding, I imagine that's going to be reflective more in next week's report there.
Any final word from you before I let you go for the day?
Well, it's a roller coaster affair here. The grain market's offering great opportunities, and we feel that pressure into the lower side of the equation here over the next couple weeks would probably be more of a buying opportunity than a selling opportunity.
Kurt, thanks much.
Very good.
Kurt Kimmel is with Grainfield, rather Bates Commodities, out of Normal, Illinois, still offering some of Grainfield's, which was remains his company. Some of those things are still available through Kurt as well. But if you'd like to give them a call at Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois, and talk to him a little bit more about the marketplace, you can. Kurt Kimmel always joins us here on the Closing Market Report on a Monday afternoon.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
In today's agricultural news, a highly anticipated summit on energy took place in the Senate last Friday. A bipartisan group of some 20 senators met to question experts on the best options for responding to the energy crisis. The summit comes just before the Senate is expected to consider several proposals to expand domestic oil and gas drilling and advance renewable energy sources. Majority Leader Harry Reid is reportedly optimistic a long-term consensus could develop on these highly controversial issues, but it's not clear if it will happen soon enough for the bill to move through the Senate this month. Speaking of things that are happening in Washington, D.C., the New Energy Reform Act of 2008, or New Era, is one of the measures expected to come before the Senate this week. The National Farmers Union Board of Directors has endorsed the comprehensive bipartisan proposal. NFU President Tom Bias says renewable energy sources like ethanol, wind, and solar can be produced in America's heartland, benefiting farmers and their rural communities. He says New Era would make significant investments in these and other fuels from the farm. On the subject of farm-based fuel, Senate Ag Committee Chairman Tom Harkin, along with Indiana Republican Richard Lugar, has introduced legislation to increase the number of flex fuel vehicles. The senators say manufacturing more flex fuel vehicles and making them available to U.S. motorists will help reduce the nation's dependence on foreign oil, cut back greenhouse gas emissions, and bolster rural economic development. Currently, flex fuel vehicles make up less than 10% of the new vehicles sold in the U.S. Harkin and Lugar want to see a sharp acceleration of the number of these vehicles to enable continued expansion of ethanol in transportation fuel markets. Harkin says to make full use of the increased ethanol production, which he says is needed, more vehicles that can use up to 85% ethanol must be on the road. He says the bill will give consumers the flex fuel vehicles they want to drive so they can use greater quantities of domestic renewable fuels. If Harkin and Lugar are successful in passing their legislation, those vehicles will only be successful, of course, if E85 is widely available. And a broad coalition is now asking House Speaker Nancy Pelosi to include tax credits that support new alternative fuel infrastructure in any pending energy bill or stimulus package. While the presidential candidates and members of Congress are calling for mandatory production of flex fuel vehicles, National Ethanol Vehicle Coalition Executive Director Phil Lampert says there's a bigger issue to deal with, the lack of sites to fuel those vehicles. That's why the group, which includes ethanol producers, automakers, petroleum makers, and more, would like to see legislation introduced by Congresswoman Stephanie Hersath of South Dakota and John Shimkus of Illinois included in any energy measure approved during the session of Congress. The measure, the E85 and Biodiesel Access Act, would enhance the alternative fuel vehicle refueling property credit. increasing an existing 30% tax credit for the cost of installing clean fueling equipment to 50%, and increasing the $30,000 maximum credit to $100,000. And finally today, another note from the federal government. Sign up for the new direct and countercyclical program for farmers started in mid-July, but the Farm Service Agency says a great number of individuals have not enrolled. Farm Service Agency Executive Director of the state of Wisconsin, Ben Bransel, says if folks don't act soon, they'll miss an opportunity.
September 30th is the final date at which a farm can enroll for their 2008 direct and countercyclical program contract. If they have not started the contract by September 30th, there's no opportunity to enroll in the direct and countercyclical program for 2008.
Bransel explains what's needed when farmers head to the local FSA to sign a contract.
There isn't really anything that a producer needs to bring in with them. They have to have crop reported. If they haven't crop reported, they can do that at the time. We're concerned that if they rent lands, that they have cash leases available to us. If they don't have it the day that they come in, they still have 2 weeks to get that information to us. They just need to get themselves in the office and be ready to advise us as to what contract on what farms they would like to enroll in.
Producers with questions, including whether or not they're enrolled, need to visit or call their local FSA office as soon as possible. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Listening to the Closing Mark Report. It's a production of WILL, public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. This is the first in a month of Harvest Hour editions of the Closing Mark Report. That's right, from today until the 10th of October, the Closing Mark Report will be an hour long on most of these radio stations. The second half hour will be spent with a guest and your phone calls. Our first guest is Joe Prusaki. He joined us on Commodity Week last Friday afternoon. Prusaki is with USDA NASS and helped to put together those crop production report numbers that were released Friday morning of last week. Speaking of which, we'll remind you now of what they looked like and some of their consequences. The September crop production report from the United States Department of Agriculture should give a fundamental boost to the corn and soybean markets for the coming year. The agency cut the crop size for both crops. The corn yield estimate dropped a bit more than the trade had expected, down some 2.7 bushels to the acre, says University of Illinois Extension Ag Economist Darrell Good.
The market was looking for a more modest cut. That cuts the estimated crop size nearly 200 million bushels and makes our stock situation look a lot tighter for the year ahead, even with dramatic cuts in feed use of corn. So that tightening up of the balance sheet, I think, maybe particularly given the price declines we've seen in corn in recent weeks, I think put a little bullishness back in that marketplace.
That's because even with the second largest corn crop ever to be harvested in the United States on hand in the nation's fields, demand for corn will leave just a month's supply in the bin by the time next fall rolls around, just above 1 billion bushels. It's not much and should point to higher prices, but not necessarily.
Certainly there's some outside things that we've got to keep an eye on. The energy markets, the value of the dollar, the strength of the world economies, I think are all really important for the demand side of our crops for the year ahead. If we continue to see lower energy, higher dollar, and economic concerns, I think people are going to begin to wonder, well, maybe export demand will be a little weaker than currently forecast, and we may have enough inventory to get by.
He says on the surface, the USDA number suggests the price of corn has gone low enough for the time being, even before the combines roll through the fields. The nation will know more when the Washington statisticians release the October crop production estimates. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
You're listening to the Closing Mark Report. It's a Monday afternoon. Joining us to take a look at the cash grain market is Brian Stark of the Andersons, right here in Champaign County. Good afternoon to you, Brian.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Well, I have to make an apology up front, because when I was talking to one of your compadres last Wednesday from the folks over at Delphi, he had talked about a producer who brought a load of corn in and dried it down to 15%, but it came in at 18, and for the life of me, I could not get that 18 out of my head as the standard. You heard about this, didn't you?
I think a little bit, yes.
Yeah, you probably did. So, and I know better. I really do. My wife and I sit down each year, and we have a farmer that we figure the shrink on. Give him an Excel spreadsheet that we backfigure shrink on, and we'll probably need to do that again shortly.
Yeah, shortly.
And I give Clarion's really good with the Excel spreadsheets, and I give her what that formula ought to be, and I know better. I just made it wrong. So,
well, that's okay.
You know what? One of the listeners called me out on it, so I apologize.
We can't be right all the time.
No, we can't. And it's tough when you're not right all the time.
Right.
But the only thing you can do is put your head down and go forward. So
let's
do that today. Put our head down, go forward. Why don't you first start by telling me, with this delayed harvest, what that means in premiums, if there are any, for both corn or beans for quick ship?
Well, I think the processors are scrambling right now. I think, obviously, the deluge of rains that came across the eastern part of the Corn Belt have caused the basis to feel very firm, beans specifically, but also we're seeing it in corn as well. Some bigger numbers, and I think more so than posted is the numbers that you hear under the table being talked about. But the processor definitely is needing both commodities and is going to have to push to the basis, because, quite frankly, the farmer, he isn't a big seller right now with the way not excited about the flat price, so they're going to have to get it from the commercial. And at this point in time, anybody that has the inventory is probably going to command a pretty big number to move it.
Oh, you got to tell me, what kind of numbers are we talking about? Just the premium part.
Oh, I think the premiums right now, I think we've heard as high as 60, 70 over on beans over the November contract. Corn, I suppose you could probably get something close to maybe slight unders to option price the board. So I think, obviously, it just depends on, you can confirm those or not, but a lot of bigger numbers starting to come out, and I think it just depends on how quickly we can get in the field. But the crop isn't maturing at a very rapid pace. That's one scary thought about it. In different areas you look out, frost will remain a big concern, regardless of whether it's the balance this month or the first of next. These cooler temperatures and wetter conditions really are going to slow things down. So this fall could potentially be as challenging as the spring was.
Yeah, indeed it could be. Have you taken any loads in at this point?
No, we haven't. So we're obviously still waiting to see the first new crop loads, and hopefully here in a few weeks we will.
Okay, and your bids for the day are?
532 for fall corn, cash soybeans, 1129.
Well, get sleep now, because pretty soon they'll keep you busy.
You bet. Thanks,
all right,
Dad.
You're welcome, Brian. Brian Stark is with the Andersons, joins us here on the Closing Mark Report from their Champaign County, Illinois facility. Each and every Monday afternoon, in 2 minutes, we'll talk with an agricultural meteorologist from Chesapeake Energy in Chicago.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Tom Rogers. Tonight, Champaign School Board members consider two key reports on the district's future. They hear about an agreement that would add new classroom space to two Northside Champaign grade schools as part of the ongoing consent decree over racial equity. The plan includes a new building at the current Washington School site and a new wing at Garden Hills School. Also, the two school board members who launched the Great Schools Together project formally present the results of their months-long visioning process. It includes suggested long-term goals in several areas, from diversity to student achievement to parent engagement. Governor Rob Blagojevich has declared 7 Illinois counties state disaster areas. The governor visited a Red Cross shelter for flood victims in the Chicago suburb of Des Plaines today before taking an aerial tour. The counties covered include Cook, DuPage, DeKalb, Grundy, Kane, LaSalle, and Will. Residents in those counties are working to recover from flooding caused by record-setting rains over the weekend. The governor's office says the state disaster declaration means more state assets and personnel will be available to flooded communities.
More than 700 Ameren customers, most of them in southern Illinois, are still without electricity. There's good news, however. National Weather Service meteorologists say the weather will be favorable for much of the rest of the week. A former student of David Foster Wallace calls the novelist one of the finest of his lifetime. Wallace was found dead in his California home Friday. His death is being called a suicide. Wallace was raised in Urbana and taught for several years at Illinois State University. He was best known for his 1996 novel Infinite Jest and his expansive and ironic writing style. Insurance executive and former Indiana candidate for governor J. Patrick Rooney has died. He was 80. Rooney's personal attorney, John Sullivan, says Rooney apparently died in his sleep and was found dead this morning at his home in Indianapolis. Sullivan says a cause wasn't known. Rooney briefly sought the 1996 Republican nomination for governor and was a longtime financial contributor to GOP candidates. He headed the Golden Rule Insurance Company. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.
I'm Todd Gleason. You're listening to the Closing Market Report on a Monday afternoon. Time to take a look at what the agricultural weather holds in store for us. And we're joined now by John Davis of Chesapeake Energy in Chicago, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, John.
Well, good afternoon, Todd.
Oh, it's good to talk to you. How much rainfall did we have across different parts of the Midwest?
Well, we had a swath that extended through parts of Missouri, northern Illinois, into Michigan that was anywhere between 4 to as much as 10 inches, whereas by the time you get down to the Ohio Valley, there was virtually nothing. So the real heavy rainfall was basically in a swath where the remnants of Ike moved up into, basically from Missouri through northern Illinois up into Michigan.
And then after you put that into the soil moisture conditions, which I think were still actually pretty good, are we at saturated points, and what happens next?
Well, certainly we are at saturation points with what the moisture from Gustav back 10 or 12 days ago and now the moisture over the weekend across those areas. The percentages for the first half this month are in the order of 5 to 700% of normal across that swath. But from this point on, it does look like the weather is going to go incredibly quiet with no rain systems expected the remainder of this week, and that's also the case looking into next week, and relatively mild conditions as well. So after an extremely active first half of this month, it does look like the weather as we go into the back half of September will be very, very quiet with dry conditions and very moderate temperatures.
Yeah, moderate temperatures, those are the things I think probably producers are worried about the most at this point. If we can dry out, they'd like a little moderate temperature and maybe some heat along with it. Anything like that in the 10 days?
Well, no sign of it getting any heat per se. You know, we had some little bit of heat over the weekend in parts of the southeastern belt, and that was also a result of Ike. But overall, temperatures will remain kind of on the normal side across most areas. But for any real additional or extra growing degree days, no real sign of that coming up as we kind of have a normal temperature regime over the next couple of weeks.
Take a look to the south for us, if you could, to Argentina, Brazil. Tell us how they're setting up for planting season.
Well, Argentina, which has had some real dryness issues as they're coming out of their winter season, they're beginning to get some more rain over the next week or two as the pattern becomes a bit more active across those areas that will benefit their crop areas across Argentina. And southern Brazil is also getting quite a bit of rain, and it looks like that general trend will continue as well. So from a soil moisture standpoint across most areas of South America, certainly conditions are good in most areas and improving in some of the areas that had been problematic.
And finally, if you could take a look around the rest of the world for me.
Well, I think overall here, Australia continues to improve. They've gotten very good rains over the past couple of weeks in the winter wheat areas of Australia, and it does look like the active pattern will continue across those locales. And so the our Australian winter wheat crop continues to be in much, much better shape than what had occurred over the past couple of years.
John, we appreciate you being with us for the afternoon.
My pleasure, Todd.
All right, John. Davis is with Chesapeake Energy out of Chicago, Illinois, joining us here on the Closing Market Report. Please remember, you can hear today's futures analysis and cash grain reports right there on the website. Go to willag.org. We'll say goodbye now to some of our listeners. For the rest of you, in just a few moments, we'll open the phone lines for our Closing Market Report Harvest Hour discussion. Today's guest is Joe Persaki with USDA NASS. You You're listening to the Harvest Hour edition of the Closing Market Report. I'm your host, Todd Gleason, for the next about 4 weeks, 20 different shows. We'll be bringing you an extra half hour of the Closing Market Report, opening the phone lines up for your phone calls with some discussion with some primary movers and shakers, I suppose, in the agricultural world. And we'll start today by opening the phone lines up with Joe Prasocki. He's the director of the Statistics Division at the National Agricultural Statistics Service at USDA, located in Washington, D.C. Joe was our guest on our Commodity Week program last Friday afternoon, and we'll continue our discussion with him this afternoon. Hi, Joe. How are you today?
Well, very good. I have a series of meetings this morning, but I'm here with you guys this afternoon.
But what is it that you had in your meetings this morning? Why don't you start with those to begin with? Were there anything that we ought to be aware of?
Probably not. It's all exciting, you know, management type things. What are we going to be doing for the remainder of this year, things next year? You know, just general, you know, high level type stuff, not specifically targeting any sort of report or anything like that. It's just all management type stuff.
Could you very quickly go through what the numbers look like on Friday morning last week as you took up the crop production report, please?
Well, yeah, I could talk a little bit about that. Like on corn, what we did was we took the U.S. corn yield down about 2.7 bushels per acre. And based on the information we collected on our various surveys that we conducted there at the end of August and the very first part of September. And correspondingly, we came down a half a bushel per acre on soybeans. No acreage change at this time, but that's what we did on the yield. And then there was obviously a corresponding reduction in production.
And as you took a look at those numbers that morning, what was it that struck most of the people in lockup?
Well, what, like we talked about Friday afternoon, the big thing was is what's going to be the grain weight. What we talk about is like fruit weight, and when we talk about it in lockup, you know, what's exactly going to be happening with corn and what's going to be happening with soybeans when it comes to the actual weight of the grain at the end of the season? Because right now we've got a really good handle on number of ears and a really good handle on number of pods on beans, but it's all about that grain weight. So it was a big discussion on what's the fruit weight going to be at the end.
Joe, we have one little technical note that we need to fix. We called you on the wrong phone line, so we'll need to hang up with you for just a second and give you a call back, and
okay,
then we'll be able to take phone calls, okay?
All right, cool, thanks.
Okay, Joe Prasocki is the Director of Statistics Division at the National Agricultural Statistics Service at the United States Department of Agriculture. He's joining us here on this Harvest Hour edition of the Closing Market Report. We will take your phone calls now. You can give us a call at one of these numbers if you'd like. The number is 217-333-9455. That's 333-9455, 333-WILL, if you'd like to call us with a question for Joe Prasocki. Or if you're outside of the 217 area, call us at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. Joe Prasocki is back on the line with us this afternoon. Thanks to our technical director, Jason. We appreciate his help. And good afternoon to you again, Joe. Thanks for being patient with us.
Not a problem, Todd. Always relish these opportunities.
You know, I want to ask you a couple of questions. After the August crop report, I know that you and Dave Dickey and I had some discussions about what USDA found as they went into the field, and that when you made those initial counts, you were counting blisters and made some rough estimates of what the size of the crop would look like. Now, when you got to this last crop production report, did that change very much? I suspect it did. And what was the big difference between the August and the September report?
Let's talk about corn, okay? I guess
okay.
I think that's what people are, I'm guessing a lot of interest is on corn, what's going on there. Like in August, you're correct. When we're out there in August, when our numerators are out in the field counting at our sample plots, what they're doing is they're counting stalks, and if there's any ears being developed at that time. Well, in August, when we were out there the end of July, first part of August, with this crop being so far behind, we had a lot of stalks. But there's a good relationship historically between stalks and ears. So we had a pretty good handle on the number of ears based on historic relationships. Well, this time when we were out there, we were still counting stalks again, but then the ears are much more along, so we're able to count ears throughout the season or throughout the samples. And the other thing that we're able to get is what we call a kernel row length, which is the measure of the, you know, the amount of grain on the cob itself, plus we were able to get a diameter as well. So that's the big thing, the big difference in September versus August going on out there in the field counts.
Your expectations in August, I think, were that this big crop would actually get bigger at that point. Is it merely the fact that the diameter isn't as large as expected? Is this really the reason?
Let's talk a little bit about that. In August, you know, we had a real, like I said, we had a really good idea of what the ears per acre are going to be, but then the idea on the fruit weight or the grain weight is going to be is pretty much a guess in August. It's what's going to happen. So we have models that use the last 5 years as an indicator which way to go. So again, it's based on historic information, and as we know, weather plays a big factor in what's going to happen with this corn crop or what's happened with this corn crop. So when we're out there in the end of August, first part of September, you're right. When we measure those ears around, they're quite a bit smaller than historically what we've seen at this time during that same data collection time frame, which leads one to believe that it's a smaller ear, lighter grain weight going on there.
Are your expectations, and I know you really can't go too far into this, are your expectations for the size of this crop to maintain itself at this point, especially with the rainfall that we've come across in the last week and a half?
Yeah, that's a good question, Todd. I really can't tell you. You know, I'm sitting here right now. I'm waiting for data at the end of this month from our field people, and then the question is, what's going to happen? You know, I caution people to say, okay, well, it's not going to fill. I said, well, I don't know. In September, or from September to October in 2004, the crop filled out. Is this going to be the same year? I can't tell you. But right now, what our forecast right now is based upon the best information we have at time of data collection.
If you'd like to join our conversation with Joe Persaki this afternoon, who's the Director of Statistics Division at USDA NASS, please feel free to give us a call. The phone numbers are 217-333-9455. That's 217-333-WILL or 800-222-9455, 800-222-9455. That one's toll-free, and you can help us talk with Joe Persaki this afternoon. He's with USDA NASS. We're talking about crop production and what USDA NASS does in particular. Maybe you could take up the bean side of this situation as well, because I'd like to know just how far along the bean crop appeared to be when we measured the last time around and where you think it may mature.
Yeah, when we talk a little bit about beans, one of the key things that's kind of surprising, I guess, with the current production practices in place was that the we call them plants per 18 square feet, which translates in plants per acre, was quite a bit lower this year than we've had in, you know, recent years, like say maybe the last 3 to 4 years. And that could be a factor related to, you know, the factors that we had with, you know, the very wet spring through June going on there that could have affected the plant population. Well, if you've got less plants, you're going to have less pods per, or what we call 18 square feet or pods per acre, which is going to potentially limit your soybean yields. You just don't have enough pods there. And that's the one thing that, you know, that was a discussion that we had. Now, that historically, when you go back over time, when you had less pods, the beans were heavier. Well, now, you know, trying to look at the data and see what's going on, you know, it's hard to tell right now in September where it's going to be. If we have this discussion again in October, I will have very good information, most likely, from our field plots.
I know that this is outside of what NASS does, and it's more under the WASDE reports, but I'm wondering that there's a lot of discussion about weather, and part of this is within your purview. Whether last year's crop was overestimated in size, and this has to do with the WASDE reports and the continued drop in the number of bushels that will be fed out to livestock, and whether there's some adjustment there that's being made on the size of the crop that was actually harvested last year. Have you guys taken that up very much?
Not really. However, if there's any adjustments to be made to the size of the 2007 corn or soybean crop, Those would be reflected in the grain stocks report that comes out at the end of September on the 30th. But you know, we've had, to be honest, there's been a lot of people that's called us and say, hey, what's going on? More so on the soybean side than the corn side, what's going on with soybeans.
And tell me, what is it? Oftentimes we hear on Commodity Week, on our closing market report, and from farmers and producers and brokers in general, that the USDA NASS is just trying to make numbers fit the way that they'd like them to fit. how do you respond to those criticisms?
Okay, well, I can tell you from a NASS perspective, growing up as a kid down in Southern Illinois on a farm, people are very distrusting of government in general. That's the hand I'm dealt. But to be honest with you, not really. When we put out or publish a corn number, a corn yield, or soybean yield, it's based upon information that the farmers gave us, either via a survey that they filled out, or we telephoned and they sent us back information, or from us visiting their field plot. Sure, we look at the information, we look at relationships over time, but it's really the information that we get from farmers. Now, I know a lot of farmers say, hey, you know, it's none of your business what information you collect from me, or there's no reason to get this from me. But still, in the bigger picture, it impacts them because, just like we saw this last, was a Friday, with the grain prices that jumped up a bit, from the reports.
Well, why collect the information?
Why collect it?
Yeah.
I have good stories on this one. I've thought about this a lot. When I was state director out in Iowa, farmers would always ask me, well, what's in it for me? Why do you collect this information? I'd be better off without USDA in my business. Well, I said, well, me personally, I'm a big free market promoter. I believe in economics. I was trained in economics. You have some good, it's not the University of Illinois, but the university down south there, Southern Illinois University. And I'm a firm believer in economics and economic theory. And one thing for efficient markets, that for markets to be as efficient as possible, is to have as much information as possible. Because markets become very chaotic if information is held close, meaning that if you know something that I don't know, you can make a profit. And it's not necessarily good for everybody. But if everybody has the information, it allows for efficient markets. And I can tie that into a couple just anecdotal comments. What if it's like if you go to the grocery store and there's not a single item priced in the whole grocery store, and you don't have an idea that is it a better deal to get, a particular brand of cheese versus another brand of cheese. You don't have any idea. And you wouldn't know the price or how much you have to pay until you check out at the grocery store. Is that efficient? No. Then I argue, if you have to go to a meeting, okay, say you've got to go to a meeting down in Southern Illinois. Let's pick a town like down around Jonesboro or Anna, and you have to get there from Champaign there, Todd. There's no road signs. There's no speed limit signs, and you expected to get down there. Well, those road signs and speed limit signs are information, and without information, you'll never get there. And how can producers, how can people in the industry get to where they want to go, get to their goals without information to allow for efficient markets?
Joe, we need to take just a couple of minutes off, and we'll be back to talk with you shortly, okay?
Excellent.
All right, Joe Prasaki is the director of the Statistics Division at USDA NASS, joining us here on a Harvest Hour expanded edition of the Closing Market Report. We'll take your phone calls again in 2 minutes at 333-9455. That's a 217 area code, or 800-222-9455. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from the University of Illinois.